Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little more about Rudy Gobert and specifically his offensive fit with the Timberwolves. There was a great interview between Tony Jones and John Krasinski, both of The Athletic, about Gobert's fit in Minnesota. I want to pull out a couple of things that Tony said and discuss those here on the show today, plus a Bleacher Report article about teams that improve with most the offseason, and a couple notes on the Timberwolves, leaked early notes on their schedule before the actual schedule release here, actually Wednesday afternoon. So it's all coming here on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I am the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to us by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. And a big thank you for those of you that make Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere. You can find us on YouTube as well as all of your favorite audio platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Odyssey, you name it. You can find Locked On Wolves and all your favorite Locked On podcasts. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Locked On T Wolves and my account, which is at B Beacon. That's with two B's, two E's, C K E N. All right. So here today on the show, I want to talk Rudy Gobert. There was a recent interview. Actually, I think it just published Monday or Tuesday this week, between John Krasinski, of course, the great Timberwolves beat reporter for The Athletic locally in the Twin Cities, and Tony Jones, who covers the Utah Jazz for The Athletic. And if you don't have an Athletic subscription, consider getting one. Obviously, John and others do a fantastic job. So I'm not going to like read verbatim a lot of answers or any of that because, consider subscribing to The Athletic. But there were a couple of things said in the course of this kind of an interview, kind of one of those like back and forth roundtable, like email back and forth answers to questions sort of a deals, where there was a couple things discussed or that Tony said that I want to kind of pull out and explore a bit more. One that I don't agree with and one that I do, and I think is an interesting point. So I want to do that. And really, that's kind of the only thing I want to note. It's a good read. Again, go read it for yourself, please. But I'll quickly, I guess, summarize what Tony said initially when John Krasinski asked him what kind of player the Wolves getting. So I want to summarize that briefly, and then I want to get to two very specific things. So Tony, who's spent, the last 6 years, I guess, covering 6 years, is that right? 6 years covering Rudy Gobert, or I guess 8 years in the league now. Wow. Tony says, let's say it the obvious, Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player on earth. Goes on to say he's arguably as good of a paint protector as any player the NBA has seen since Orlando Magic, Dwight Howard. He's historically good. He says he's incredibly impactful on offense, including being the best screen setter in basketball. So he says both Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell see a lot more space off the dribble. He's an elite finisher at the rim. He's got tons of vertical gravity as a roller after setting screens. And he's durable. He has a high motor. He never stops, that sort of a thing. All those things are said by Tony Jones about Rudy Gobert, coming from someone who covered him for the last 8 years and is, of course, disappointed to see him no longer in a Jazz uniform. We've talked about all those things here on the show, but you know, don't take it from me. Take it from Tony Jones, best defensive player in the league, an elite shot blocker, best shot blocker in the league, one of the best rebounders in the league, a game changer offensively because of his screen setting. All those things coming from Tony Jones at The Athletic, and then the things that I really want to dig into. The first one is Tony talks a little bit about Rudy Gobert and his usage rate. He doesn't use those words. He talks about him getting enough touches. Let me find his exact words so that I don't misrepresent this. And then I'll say why I don't entirely agree with it. Let me find his exact words here. I lost it. But basically, he's saying that Rudy needs to get his touches on offense, which isn't something that that people necessarily think about when they think of Rudy Gobert, right? Here we go. So John asks Tony Jones, he says, what are the biggest obstacles that could get in the way of making the Gobert addition a success? Tony says, There are a couple of things. I worry Gobert won't get the ball enough to be happy in Minnesota. Quietly, one of the biggest quirks of his, meaning Rudy's, is that he will demand the basketball and make it known that he isn't getting the basketball. That kind of stuff wears in a locker room over time, and the Wolves have a lot of guys on that roster who need the ball in their hands. Okay, pause there. He continues with the second point. We'll get to that later. We'll get to a related topic later. But skipping down to John's answer to this part about Gobert getting the ball in his hands enough or getting enough shots, John says, interesting. I think some people may look at Gobert's career averages and say, see, he fits perfectly with volume shooters like Edwards and Russell because he doesn't need the ball, but that doesn't sound like that's the case. Now, me talking here, go over to Rudy Gobert's basketball reference page. Last year, Rudy Gobert had a 16.9% usage rate, according to BBR, according to Basketball Reference. That placed him ninth on the Utah Jazz, if you're throwing out guys that played a handful of games. So there's three guys that played 15 or less games that I'm removing. So he finished ninth on the Jazz in usage rate last season. If he was on the Timberwolves with that same 16.9% mark, he also would have finished ninth on the Timberwolves. So there were eight guys on the Jazz, and there would have been eight guys on the Timberwolves who all carried a higher usage rate than Rudy Gobert last season. And that wasn't an anomaly. The year prior was 17%. The year prior was 16.2%. In fact, his career average, his career usage rate is 16.2%. It was very low his first three seasons when he wasn't a true star, but it's hovered between 16.2 and 17.8. So within a point and a half, 1.6 points over the last five seasons. So very consistently, a similar usage rate year over year. Now, that doesn't mean Tony's wrong, that he doesn't, you know, Tony knows better than I do. He, you know, was in that locker room as a beat reporter, covered the team day in and day out. I'm not saying Rudy wouldn't complain when he doesn't get the ball. The point I'm making is that consistently he's gotten the ball. He's finished a possession 16-ish percent of the time over the course of his career. And that hasn't really fluctuated very much, at least not in the last five seasons. And he also was never a massive part of Utah's offense. It doesn't mean that he won't get cranky from time to time or hasn't gotten cranky when he doesn't get the ball as he would deem to be enough in the Jazz system. But I mean, obviously Donovan Mitchell, and I mean, he used a ton of possessions last year, and Mike Conley obviously has for quite some time. Even Jordan Clarkson last season used a ton of possessions for them. But there were guys, I'm like Eric Paschal, also on the Timberwolves now, had a higher usage rate in 58 games than Rudy Gobert. He used 17.7% of possessions when he was on the floor for the Jazz. So it's not like Rudy would be going, it's not like he's not going to go from a 25% usage guy to a 15% usage guy. He's very likely going to be in the same neighborhood now. I will say Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell are the most talented trio of offensive players he's played with. Late stage Mike Conley is not a dynamic scorer. He never really was a dynamic scorer. Donovan Mitchell, obviously. But like there haven't been very many other dynamic perimeter players in terms of scorers. Like he's obviously played with, you know, Ricky Rubio from a distributor standpoint. Jordan Clarkson's a very good player and a talented scorer. But to have three guys that could all probably would consider themselves number one options. Now, you're not going to win a title with all three of those guys right now being number one options. But Towns, Edwards, and D'Lo are all very high usage players that are very talented, that are all effectively three-level scorers. And, I mean, yeah, that could bring Gobert's usage rate down a little. But he already was only using 16% of possessions and was ninth on the Utah Jazz last season in usage rate. So I don't think it's going to be an absolutely drastic difference. And I guess the key there to the thread to pull on there could be just how cranky and how noisy is he going to be if he doesn't get the shots. Now he goes on to say, Tony goes on to say later in the interview with John at The Athletic that Rudy's also a leader. He can be vocal. He could also take a backseat. He's smart. He kind of knows what to say and when and picks his spots. So perhaps it won't be a thing. It's a little different now coming into a situation where you're clearly the fourth option offensively versus in Utah, where you're expected to be the co-superstar with Donovan Mitchell and he'd been there for 8 years and you could be more vocal. Gobert's, again, an intelligent guy. He gets it. He knows how to play the game. He's been around a long time. he's going to say and do the right things, very likely, at least early on in Minnesota. Now, if they're not winning as much as they should, if they're sitting in seventh in the West at the All-Star break and Rudy's averaging career lows, does that change? Maybe. And that's obviously part of the risk that's baked into this whole thing. And we'll see how that shakes out. All right. I want to get to another point in this article that I do think is an interesting one that I hadn't really considered much in detail. So we're going to do that here next. First, though, before we do, let's talk about our friends over at the NHTSA. You're hanging out with a few friends and putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. But you live nearby. You can make it home, okay? It's no big deal. What are the odds you'll get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst that could happen? Your insurance goes up. You lose your license. You lose your job. You total your car. You kill someone. Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. All right, another thing that Tony Jones and John Krasinski at The Athletic talked about related to offense, and specifically Gobert, and I guess loosely related to usage rate and how the Wolves may deploy him. It's actually more his effect on Karl-Anthony Towns. They talk a little bit about how Towns will have to prove he can defend power forwards. Can he defend defensively as a four in today's NBA? And that's a question that largely remains to be seen. And it's posed here. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting that Tony Jones brought up is, I'll just read his answer. He says, the best offense around Gobert is the one that takes advantage of his screening and creates shots off the pass. I do think Gobert will make Edwards and Russell better players. I do wonder how his presence in the paint will impact Towns, who may not have his customary mid-post spots to work from like he usually does. The fit between Gobert and Cat will be key. In a perfect world, they cover each other for what they don't collectively do well, and they complement each other for their collective strengths. Now, that last bit, this is me talking now, that last bit we've heard, we've said it, you know, Towns is good at the things that Rudy isn't as good at, and Rudy's great at the things that Towns isn't as good at. That's clear, right? The most interesting thing here, and we know he's a good screener, we've heard screen assists, if you listen to Locked On Jazz, David Locke loves talking about screen assists, anybody connected to the Utah Jazz has for a long time, and now, of course, we'll talk about it on the podcast from time to time because Rudy's a fantastic screener and it does matter, even if screen assists can be overblown. I'm saying that now. I may be singing a different tune in, say, December after covering, you know, Rudy here for the first couple months. But clearly that's going to help Ant and D'Lo and the rest of the Wolves guards, especially because Rudy's such a good on-ball screener. But the most interesting thing here is the point about his presence in the paint may take away from Towns' mid-post opportunities. And this is probably a topic for an entire episode. I could go back and pull the actual numbers of how many mid-post touches Towns got last year, but I'm confident in saying they went way up with a full year under Chris Finch. You know, instead of the low-post touches, we were seeing perimeter touches, we were seeing free throw line extended touches. I talk about this a lot on the show. It really is almost like the Nikola Jokic type usage, although Towns is more kind of free throw line extended where he can take a big dribble step back to the 3-point line. Jokic doesn't really do that. Jokic is more truly mid-post where he can shoot from there and really kind of be the fulcrum of the offense. It's loosely what Denver does with Jokic. And to be clear, if any Nuggets fans are listening to this, I know Jokic is a million times of a better passer than Karl-Anthony Towns. That's really not much of an exaggeration. Towns is a good passing big man. Jokic is otherworldly, one of the best in history already in terms of being a passing big. But Towns is used functionally in the Wolves' offense in some ways similar to Jokic. And those mid-post touches went way up last year under Chris Finch because Towns can shoot mid-range jumpers. He prefers to take the big step back and shoot a three. Perhaps, pass we saw him occasionally, you know, get a little bit too maybe frisky with his cross court, fancy, you know, softball style, underhanded passes and overhead passes. And some of the things that worked out once every five times, but the other, you know, three of the other four times were all disasters. Or the one out of five times that the pass actually was delivered, the other player missed the shot. We saw that too. But will the spacing not work now with Towns being not the biggest player on the floor, but playing the four? Rudy's not going to be anywhere but in the paint, unless you're running some sort of action where he's screening off the ball in the perimeter. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's what it is. It's Towns with in the mid post on one side of the floor. Rudy's setting a pin down on the other end of the floor and rolling to the basket, and Towns is hitting him there, or hitting the, you know, a D'Lo or an Anthony Edwards popping out onto the perimeter off the pin down. That's the sort of action I think we'll see more of. But Towns also doesn't make super quick snap decisions with the ball in his hands, right? He's a processor. Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a detriment. And if he doesn't read and react fast enough, if he holds the ball too long, now you lose your spacing because Rudy's crowding in the paint. The defense can crowd Rudy and Kat, who's now in the mid-range. You have Ant and D'Lo floating on the perimeter, and Jaden McDaniels, who's less of a spot-up threat, maybe in the other corner. And it breaks down, and Towns is forced almost into making a fancy pass or a tough, you know, Dirk-style one-legged fall away. That is a fair concern. Is how will the Wolves regulate those mid-post touches? Will Finch still scheme those up for Towns? Will Towns do it with some level of success? Will he be intelligent with those touches? Will he process fast enough? I'm not saying he can't. I just think sometimes he likes to hold onto the ball and see things develop. But like a quarterback in the pocket in football, at some point, you know, it's not just the shot clock, right? It's the secondary actions. It's the off-ball actions. And if those take place and Rudy's now in the paint, what are you doing? I mean, you could dump the ball into Rudy. You could throw a lob. I mean, that I think we'll see some of the, you know, the big to big passing there, certainly. But I think it's an absolutely fair point. And it's fascinating to consider. We'll talk more about screening another time. But I do think that Rudy's screening ability, I joke about the overselling of screen assists, but Karl-Anthony Towns is an okay screener when he's not committing offensive fouls. But that's a huge win, right? That's a huge if, or a huge but, I guess, more accurately, because Kat picks up 1 to 2 offensive fouls a game, and you know, probably half of those are illegal screens, right? It's sticking out his knee or sticking out his foot. And Rudy gets called for those too, because he is such a good screen setter. It's like Kevin Garnett, right? I mean, at what percentage of KG screens were actually illegal screens? But he was so good at it that he got away with it. And I think officials just kind of, you know, let him get away with stuff. Rudy's similar in that regard. And Kat hasn't earned that respect. And this is another topic. We've talked about this a lot on the show too, is officials call things, whether or not they intend there to be a bias. If Kat complains a lot, they're more likely to make more calls against Kat because he has a reputation of fouling a lot. And I'm sure officials may not admit it. They don't like the way, you know, that players, for lack of a better term, whine, and sometimes incessantly, players like Towns that don't leave things alone when they've committed a foul, an obvious foul, and complain about it, etc. Rudy's different than Kat in that regard. So we're going to see offensive fouls go down, which it matters a ton, obviously, in terms of personal fouls on Towns from a game-to-game basis. Can he stay on the floor and not foul out? But it also matters from a team foul perspective, or I should say from a turnover perspective, not team foul, turnover perspective. You know, 1 or 2 Karl-Anthony Towns illegal screens or offensive fouls a game, that's 1 or 2 turnovers per game, which is another bucket or two per game for the opposing team. And, you know, that differential, that point swing, that matters. That adds up over the course of the season. So if you figure Rudy's setting more screens than Kat now, you're not only saving Towns the offensive foul trouble, but you're also saving your team turnovers and points off turnovers the other direction. So that's something that we shouldn't overlook, is Rudy's impact in that category as well. All right, let's close the show by talking about the Bleacher Report article that I mentioned, and then also by talking about the schedule, the early returns, or the early, I guess, leaks on the schedule. First, let's talk about our friends over at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. Of course, NFL preseason is about to enter week 2. So if you want to bet on preseason, you can do that over there. MLB, we're entering the home stretch, another 50 or so games left. The Twins are no longer in first place, but I'm sure you can find some futures over there for the Twins for, you know, winning the division, making the playoffs, maybe winning the World Series. And then also NBA futures, win totals are all over there as well. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sport wagering information, from live in-game betting to scores and podcasts. They have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, let's close the show by talking about the Bleacher Report article that was written up by Andy Bailey, who's one of, two or three writers over at Bleacher Report that does a really good job and covering the league and mostly has really solid, like, overall national analysis. He wrote an article called the NBA teams that improved most during the 2022 offseason. The sixth team listed, I don't think it's in any particular order, but the Wolves did make the list at number six. Obviously he references the Gobert acquisition. He talks about what he calls the hand-wringing. An understandable amount of hand-wringing is what Andy Bailey says about the cost the Wolves paid for Rudy, the role players, and of course the draft picks. Then he says over the last six seasons, Gobert was first league-wide in total blocks, second in rebounds, second in true shooting percentage, and fourth in win shares behind only James Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nikola Jokic. He says over the same stretch, the Utah Jazz were plus 9.2 points per 100 possessions with him on the floor and minus 0.9 with him off. Utah had the best defense in the league, despite getting little help on that end from perimeter players. He goes on to talk about the instant help he'll give there, and then offensively with Gobert ruling and Cat spacing, opponents will have to pick their poison. And then he also mentions Kyle Anderson, Austin Rivers, Bryn Forbes. And closes by saying losing multiple rotation players is nothing to sneeze at, but Minnesota almost certainly raised its short-term ceiling. Also, I should say, the way that Tony Jones and John Krasinski closed their interview was Tony Jones was saying that the Wolves will be much better over the next 2 years, but then there's risk associated with the end of Gobert's contract, which is also part of that overall formula related to, oh, the Wolves give up a ton of draft picks, plus Gobert's 30. So in 2 or 3 years, there's going to be a decline. He's a 7-footer. He plays hard. He's generally durable, knock on wood. But at some point, there's going to be some wear and tear. This is all true. The Wolves know this. You know, if they're a conference finals team, you know, NBA finals team in the next 2 or 3 years, then, you know, it's probably worth it, right? But if they're not, then they're open to some criticism. But in the immediate future, and that's Andy Bailey's point here, and this is the point I was making, because last Friday's show, David Aldridge had written at The Athletic about the Wolves having, I think, the sixth best offseason, because right now, sitting here right now, they are this much better than they were last year. They were a 46-win team. It's hard to see them not winning 52, 53 games. Not an official projection. I'll give that later. But to suggest that they're not one of the most improved teams, or one of the teams that improved their roster the most this offseason, would be crazy. And Andy Bailey's 100% right. This is a better roster than it was. It's much improved. Even if you want to complain about the picks, they're going to be better this season than they were last season, and they were pretty good last year. Okay, the last thing is the schedule notes. The actual schedule comes out, perhaps by the time you're listening to this, I believe Wednesday afternoon is when they actually release it. There's been a couple leaks out there. The first was from Chris Haynes at Yahoo. Said that the Wolves will host Rudy Gobert on October 21st, and the Wolves go to Utah for the first time, which is the big one to circle, on December 9th. So, roughly 7 weeks into the season there, more than a month and a half before Rudy has to go to Salt Lake City. But the Jazz will be in Minnesota October 21st. The Wolves also open the season at home. I lost the date, but it's like, it's right before that. It's like, I think it's October 19th. I think it's that Wednesday. Yeah, October 19th, the Wolves host the Thunder at home. So they start the season with the Thunder at home and then the Jazz at home. Consecutive games that are very winnable. Remember last year they did this. They had, what was it, Houston? And then I guess they played at Milwaukee, I think in game two, or maybe that was game three. And then they had two games against New Orleans. That's what it was. It was New Orleans twice. So it was Houston, New Orleans, New Orleans. So they really should have won all three. They only won two of them and had an ugly loss to New Orleans, and then went to Milwaukee and played them tough. And it's like, well, if they'd played like they did against Milwaukee against the Pelicans, they'd be 3-0. This is another very, if the first two games are indeed, if this is confirmed on Wednesday, home for Oklahoma City, home for Utah, those are two of the three worst teams in the West this year, almost certainly along with Houston. So, and I think Houston will probably be better than both Utah and Oklahoma City this year, frankly. So also it'll be Chet Holmgren, of course, Minnesota native, coming back to Minnesota for his first NBA game, presumably on October 19th. So that'll be really interesting. Tons of storylines there. But we'll talk schedule on Friday's episode. The schedule comes out Wednesday afternoon. So I'll give a day for everybody's hot takes and likely just post this episode on Friday to discuss my initial takes from the schedule that's released Wednesday. So all that's upcoming here on the show this week. Thank you again for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. It's greatly appreciated. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube. You can follow, subscribe on YouTube. Please like the video and leave a comment on YouTube. That definitely helps us out, and it's greatly appreciated. If you listen on Apple, please help us with the review. You can listen anywhere, though. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find Locked On Wolves. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and also at BBeacon with two Bs, two Es, C-K-E-N. Of course, the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. A reminder that you can make your second listen the Locked On NBA show. Get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes every day with Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA, your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.